Its current state on 90.5 WKAR. Reach us via email at currentstate@wkar.org. New contract bargaining between the United Auto Workers Union and American automakers is scheduled for next year. Recently, we've been getting a clearer picture of the union's priorities. Yesterday in Detroit, UAW President Dennis Williams said that wage increases will be an important part of the discussions. He has also indicated members want to eliminate a recently introduced feature of the auto worker landscape, two-tier wages and benefits. Back in 2007, the bottom was about to fall out of the U.S. automobile industry. Sales eventually plunged, and two of the Detroit Three would be bailed out of bankruptcy by the U.S. government. Part of that painful reckoning was the implementation of lower wages and fewer benefits for new hires at GM, Ford, and Chrysler. The car companies used the savings to invest in factories and to hire more workers. Instead of raises, the companies have occasionally paid out one-time bonuses and profit sharing. But today, workers, many of whom haven't got a raise in going on 10 years, say it's our time. To discuss that possibility and a few other related issues like the price of gasoline and others, Current State welcomes Sean McElinden. Dr. McElinden is the Executive Vice President of Research and Chief Economist at the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor. Thank you for joining us.
Well, good morning.
UAW President Dennis Williams spoke with the media yesterday in Detroit, and he underscored the importance of raises and eliminating the wage gap. I want to quote from Dan Howe's column in today's Detroit News. Dan Howe's, not quote necessarily, I'll paraphrase. Dan Howe's writes that there will be a balancing act that's needed, and basically he says the Detroit Three have to acknowledge that 2007, 2008 are all in the past, the times are better, so why not offer raises? The union, on the other side, has vowed in the past to allow their employers to stay competitive on labor costs with their foreign rivals operating in the United States. Do you agree on this idea of this balancing act?
Yes, I do. On the other hand, it's time to admit the crisis is over, and it's time to, you know, try to find some sort of compromise that results in everybody at the same tier over time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and obviously an eye has to be kept on competitiveness. So, you know, I think both sides are listening to the people on the line, and you know, obviously want to make sure they stay happy, both the union and the companies.
A little bit of historical context here, though, at the first. Was the creation of the two-tier wage and benefit framework necessary for the survival of the U.S. automakers?
Yeah, I think it really was. And I think the Auto Task Force, in the spring of 2009, when they were considering the final details of the federal assistance, they were negotiated with the union in May of 2009 and made that two-tier wage, and especially the benefits part of it, a very big piece of the final negotiation settlement for the bankruptcy judge. It had an enormous influence. Many people at that time, including Treasury, thought that the labor agreement was a major factor in forcing GM and Chrysler into bankruptcy.
How much do wages and benefits differ between the two tiers of workers?
Well, essentially, not all workers at the second tier are at the top wage. They have a grow-in that takes them up to about $19.60 an hour. They start a little over $14. But essentially, if you include the benefits, it can range anywhere from $42 to $43 an hour. And, the first-tier workers are costing at this point about $65 an hour. Mm. So it's a $20, $22 an hour difference. The way the Canadian Auto Workers Union solved this competitive issue for new hires was through a very long grow-in period. 10 years, you start at $14.50 an hour, and you grow all the way to that top wage year by year by year to $29. Well, in their case, $35 an hour Canadian. But I think something like that's going to happen. It won't be 10 years, however. I think patience, there's not enough patience for that. It could be less. It could be less than 6 years. It could be, I'm sure the union wants it done in three or four. And also, the first-tier workers haven't had a raise officially on their base rate, they call it. And most of them make $27 to $29 an hour on the line for the wage rate. They haven't had a raise since 2005. So we expect to see, you know, a raise 1-2% a year for about the length of the agreement per year. And, you know, that grow-in, I think they'll convert to that, and hopefully it'll ratify, you know, get enough votes to ratify the agreement at roughly at 60%. That's really the objective here, is to get enough people to ratify the agreement so we can move on without any, you know, hostility on the sidewalk.
But
you're
not suggesting, though, it seems to me you're suggesting that the car company's fortunes have not improved to the point where they could seriously entertain eliminating the two-tier framework, but maybe over a period of years?
Yes, I believe that. And it should not, it hopefully will not be a long period. I think they would argue, you know, for example, this year, Toyota will earn three times to four times as much as Ford. And that's a lot of money for product development and competitiveness. And, you know, the companies aren't all the way back in terms of earning the money they need to maintain their competitive position. There's also still legacy costs that remain outstanding for the health VIBA. You know, both Chrysler and Ford has paid theirs off. They no longer have that anchor around their neck. But the other two companies are still trying to eliminate this last vestige of legacy costs for the retirees. And, you know, and they're paying out hundreds of millions per year still to fill that VIBA back up. So this would give them time to do that. They may even borrow the money this year at a fairly low rate to maybe finally pay that off. I hope they do. And then there'll be a lot of pointing at the transplants. Only basically Mercedes makes the same wage down in Alabama as the Detroit 3 pay at the first tier up here.
You mean by the transplants, correct?
Sure. Except the problem these days is that, you know, this is a strange negotiation. You'll have three companies negotiating simultaneously for a pattern agreement, and they only have 45% of the market, and another 30% are these transplants in the South. But we find out in the South, the transplants are basically worried about competing with these new Mexican assembly plants, where the wages are much, much lower. And it could be very well, I mean, with GM's announcement, or the Mexican announcement this week, that GM's doubling its capacity in Mexico, that it's really the Mexican labor market that's still calling the tune on what's competitive. And that's very scary.
Sean McElinden is our guest. Mm-hmm. He is Executive Vice President of Research and Chief Economist at the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor. We're talking about UAW contract bargaining sessions, which will begin in 2015. The possibility of wage increases and elimination of a wage gap between the two-tier workers at the Detroit 3. Michigan's recent right-to-work law also figures into this, since a disgruntled lower-tier union member is free to stop paying union dues. How will that figure into this?
That is figuring a bit into it. Obviously the right-to-work law was primarily aimed at the public sector and is probably having more of an impact on AFSCME, but if these second-tier workers, and that's almost about half the labor force now, 39,000 UAW at Chrysler and about 22% at GM and Ford, if they remain disgruntled, if they don't think they've got, what they need out of this agreement, they'll figure, why should I pay dues? And we may actually see for the first time, because, there have been plants in right-to-work states elsewhere, UAW, that haven't lost members. But this time around, we may see some people asking to not pay dues. And, we just had a dues increase of 25% on the UAW. And so, essentially, I'm paying an extra 25%. It's not just 2 hours a month anymore. What are you going to do for me? And we're doing the same work. Why is that guy making $29 an hour and I'm only making $19? And it doesn't make the guy at $29 an hour feel any better either. He doesn't like that. The motto of the union, as you know, is solidarity forever. This is right in its face. So, they could lose not a lot of members. They would be second tier. But frankly, that's a concern for Mr. Williams, and he's admitted it. And the companies themselves don't want, we're trying to build quality, defect-free, high-quality $32,000 cars and trucks on average. And we don't want an unhappy labor force in this auto industry.
The price of oil and gasoline has been a huge story, and economically is playing a role in putting some steam in the economy. At least that's the widely held conventional wisdom. How long before the price of oil triggers concern again because it's too high? Is that months away, years away? What do you think?
Well, I think it's years away. Demand overseas is falling. Other economies are not growing like ours. We can't even export most of our oil production to those other countries. Most of the fracked oil in the United States is on private sector land. We haven't even granted a new federal land permit in years. If that ever opened up under a new administration, there'd be even more oil pouring into the refineries, or stacking up. I think this is not a short-term phenomenon. It's got at least a two-year run. And, eventually, the typical consumer looks at what's the price of gasoline going to be or diesel 2.5 years out or so when they make their decision to buy a car. But right now, based on what they saw in the last 10 years, I'm not sure they quite trust it yet. We are seeing, we'll see if they move from, let's say, small cross over vehicles like the CRV or the RAV4 to larger ones like the Chevy Traverse or the Buick Enclave. And if we start to see that happening, I want a larger vehicle because I think gasoline will stay closer to $2 a gallon. Then we're going to see a very significant shift in the market.
Mm. Let's touch on, you just alluded to mm-hmm. a vehicle manufactured here in Lansing. I'd like to ask you about Lansing's automotive footprint here. Mm-hmm. Less demand for Cadillacs lately has led to some layoffs at Lansing Grand River. Is mm-hmm. Cadillac still generally healthy in your view?
Well, they've invested $20 million in that luxury site, which Lincoln and Ford did not do. And they have unique cars, unique platforms. They're not selling well. They're making primarily sedans, which are not popular right now. The crossovers are. They need more of those in the Cadillac lineup. Obviously, workers are laid off. We think Delta Township's going to be hot. Workers can transfer there into the other kind of product. But Cadillac has to find another image to sell this new product. Yeah. And they also have big plans overseas, as in like China. It's sort of funny. Buick became a success story in China, one of the hottest nameplates in the country now for years. And now Buick's better in the United States. And I don't know if Cadillac can bring that kind of success story home. I hope so. But right now, it's a tough road to hoe for the CTS, ATS, with their trunks, and they don't have a pop-up hatch, which everybody seems to want on anything, even a BMW or a Mercedes. It's a very competitive market. And frankly, GM has gone the whole 20 yards on this. They really have poured a lot of money into it, and their CTS is a fantastic car, but just not doing that well.
Given all the macro factors, mm-hmm. Sean, the price of mm-hmm. oil and gas, the state of the larger economy, how do you assess the future of Lansing's GM operations? Will it continue to be a good thing to make crossover utility vehicles and Cadillacs and Camaros, I'll add?
Well, they're not the major long-run threat are some of these mandates from the federal government on incredibly high fuel economy levels. How do you get Cadillac to 60 miles per gallon? Which passenger cars have to hit. The cross utilities can stay down around 40 miles per gallon, but will the public think that extra cost to get that is worth it? And, that may shrink our market in the future with that higher cost, and at the same time, the gasoline is cheap. So I worry about that more. We expect the market to increase again next year and the year after that. After that, it's sort of a crapshoot, as always. We're a cyclical industry. But of all the industries in the United States running this economy, it's us and fracking that seems to be driving economic growth in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And, thank goodness for that. And not to mention almost 99% of the job in employment gains we've seen in Michigan since 2009 have been driven by the auto industry.
Mm.
We would like more.
Dr. Sean McElinden is Executive Vice President of Research and Chief Economist at the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor. Thanks for joining us, Sean.
Sure.